Hi, Hillary Wainwright. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, Bill. Good to be here. Well, I'm in London, but it's good to be talking to you.
Hillary Wainwright is a writer, activist, organizer in London, England. She was a major player in the Greater London Council that governed London for 4 years back in the 1980s, the early 1980s. The council initiated a host of efforts creating jobs, democratizing public services, giving workers more of a say in what they do, and encouraging real popular participation in societal decision-making, and also building opportunities for that participation. The council, of course, was under left leadership. It was so threatened to the conservatives that were running England at that time that they pushed through Parliament a law abolishing the council and replacing it with more easily controllable local organizations. But, of course, the council lives on, like the Paris Commune, in the memories and in the testimonies of the participants. And Hillary Wainwright's experiences in the council led to several of her books, including A Taste of Power, The Politics of Local Economics, Public Service Reform, But Not as We Know It, and Reclaim the State, Experiments in Popular Democracy. And now she carries those politics into the wonderful journal Red Pepper out of London that she co-edits. Hillary Wainwright, for me, the last several months in both the U.S. and England, they were exhilarating. In both countries, it seemed to me, it was a mutiny of the 99%, and it seemed to me to represent the emergence of a new politics that has, in fact, been incubating on the ground for some time. On the other side, nasty right-wing forces have also recognized popular distress and are also organizing to impose their vision of the new coming society. So, Hillary Wainwright, give us your sense of what it all means and the opportunities for the left, but also the grim possibilities. And then we can get to the kind of organizing that you've written about that now seems called for. So first, what's happening around the international and national and local possibilities have been grim and wonderful.
Okay, Bill, well, that's a big ask, but I'll begin with what I'm familiar with, which is in Britain, to some extent, other parts of Europe, and then consider or ask you to consider how far this is generalizable. But I suppose first one's got to recognize that these developments, whether it's the movement that has been ignited by Jeremy Corbyn's leadership of the Labour Party, which one's got to remember, he was a reluctant leader, and before he stood, there was not really an organized left of any strength inside the Labour Party. I mean, his candidature, the fact he got onto the list, sort of somehow became like a sort of spark that lit a fire, a sort of prairie fire that was in very arid terrain, you know, where people were desperate, were thirsty for some kind of alternative and some kind of authentic representation. I mean, I think the context here and in Spain and in Greece is a context where politics had become totally blocked. I mean, a mixture of the kind of hollowing out of democracy by globalization, the growth of global corporations that increasingly effectively took over or certainly gained incredible power at a national level, meaning that national governments had very little power and became increasingly acquiescent in the demands of the corporations, which led to governments that were very, very little difference from each other. So Conservative Party here, even Mrs. Thatcher's Conservative Party, you know, was not really very different from Tony Blair's Labour Party, who, you know, which kind of imitated aspects of Thatcherism. At the same time, one saw the same situation in Greece and in Spain and to some degree in Italy, you know, where political elites seemed less and less responsive to their people. At the same time, you saw a process of consolidating of the political elites, so a political caste, as Podemos in Spain talks about it. It refers to La Casta, a political caste of professional politicians who really often had not gained their position through mobilizing and winning people in the party, but who'd gained their position by being appointed by party elites. So it was a sort of self-reproducing process, and parliaments had become less and less responsive to the needs and demands of ordinary people. So politics was increasingly spun. It was increasingly a media product of media images. So people were facing more and more intense social problems, but with less and less possibilities of political expression about these problems and political solutions above all. So in that sense, it never took much organization building to spark some kind of revolt. In a way, both Podemos, I suppose, was more product of the mass movements around the indignados, the squares, which in some ways are replicated by the Occupy movement in the US, though they came before the Occupy movement. In Britain, we did have a small Occupy. We've had many, many local protests. But it wasn't until Corbyn's candidature that we gained a sort of political voice, if you like. But that wasn't preceded by a strong, build-up of organization. In a funny way, the voice then stimulated the self-organization.
In the United States, what you describe, I mean, there are differences, of course, but that same hollowing out of politics and the same desperation at many levels of the working class, it's the same. And in fact, Sanders and Corbyn, they are in many ways an expression of the same deep problems and the possibilities. Why don't you go on, in fact, and talk about those possibilities that seem to be emerging?
Yes, I think they're still quite hesitant because I think people have not yet developed a different model of change. So there's still a hope in Britain, maybe in the States, I don't know, that a leader like Jeremy or like Sanders will introduce change through the existing political system. So there's a recognition that there has to be a movement supporting these figures, but it's not yet clear the extent to which it has to be a creative movement, creating new forms of production, new forms of social organization, and even new forms of economic production, retailing, money, the whole political system. And so I think at the moment we're in a bit of a transition where people are beginning to realize that they're up against a political system that is not going to give in easily. When it sees an enemy like Corbyn, it doesn't cave in. It rallies and tries to build a wider alliance that it can use to destroy people like Clinton and Corbyn and Sanders. I think the same applies to Sanders. If he'd got anywhere much further towards the nomination, the sort of elders of the Democratic Party would have knocked him back. And I think that's what we're now seeing in the Labour Party. So we're maybe into the next phase, which is more challenging. I mean, Podemos didn't do very well in the elections, but they still seem to be standing firm. And across the country, Podemos members or members of the United Left are saying, how do we learn from the experiences of the past? What do we need to do better to reach the working class people who we've lost? So I think we haven't yet found a solution. I think personally, a lot depends on new forms of production, new forms of economy emerging from movement.
This is Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm talking to Hillary Wainwright, who edits the journal Red Pepper. She's written a lot of books, many on her experience in the Greater London Council. She's now editor of Red Pepper. She's writing about and soliciting articles on the New Age and politics, and particularly about the surge in resistant politics and grassroots and neighborhood self-organizing. Hillary Wainwright, you talked about this is the beginning of a new age of politics, this sort of emerging working class movements at the grassroots that have to pioneer a very different way of managing the society and economy and production and daily life and living together. You pointed out that it's still this organizing at the grassroots is still embryonic and hasn't reached probably most people. I think that'll probably be true for quite a while. My hypothesis is that things start getting really worse, particularly kind of spiking of food prices, more evictions and homelessness, more parts of the city that have been abandoned and completely disinvested in. That is, if an environmental crisis occurs, and that may be in in many years. It seems to me these movements, though, are really, really important. Movements for localizing energy, movements for more public transit, movements for public jobs and rebuilding infrastructure, and doing it, in fact. And some cities are succeeding. There are examples. It seems to me at the time when the crisis really hits home to most working people, and there are no ways of avoiding it, either psychologically or by just trying to work harder and push your kids ahead desperately, then it seems to me all of these city movements are going to expand, and the examples they set could in fact lead to far more.
I think that these movements, they're leading to the establishment, sort of beginning to counter-organize in a way, but I'm not sure the establishment knows how to, because the establishment, well, I'm talking about Britain, has got very inadequate connections to the people. I mean, certainly this is true in the Labour Party. In a way, Tony Blair kind of turned the Labour Party into a very rigid organization. In the past, it's been quite a federal organization in which the left had a legitimacy, local organizing had a legitimacy, which was, in a way, maybe messy and difficult for a leader, but it meant that a leader always had feedback mechanisms. It could tell when the left was getting strong, when it needed to change course. It was a bit like a building built for earthquake. It could adapt and move with some flexibility. Blair, in a way, wanted to get rid of the left and get rid of that sort of messy uncertainty, that kind of federal character. And he turned it into a super centralized, controlled apparatus, which is in a way what led people to be so disengaged and alienated from the system. And it's now meant that those who lead it, in the establishment sense, not Jeremy, who's come up in a way in as part of the revolt, they don't understand. I mean, they, for example, they cannot understand the success of Jeremy Corbyn. They cannot understand why members flock to him, because he's not a charismatic person. He's not a great speaker. He's not a demagogue. His appeal is in his authenticity and his almost ordinariness. I mean, he's clearly very, very strong and courageous person, but you can't explain the movement around him in terms of some sort of magical charisma. It's got a deeper root than that, and they can't understand it because some of them have been almost imposed by the old Blairite centralized leadership on their local parties. So they've not come from the people, and so they've got no root other than a sort of media root, and the media root obviously has got a certain power, and the media are all completely against Corbyn. There's not one columnist really who's supporting him.
Even in The Guardian?
Even in The Guardian, yeah. I mean, the one, Gary Young, who writes for The Nation, he's not like a fan, but he's been very sympathetic and understanding, and he knows what's going on. He's a very shrewd journalist, and so he's explaining the truth. But otherwise, you know, there's nobody who's giving Corbyn any kind of voice. And so the establishment reaction that, you know, the recent resignations, you know, they've been completely without a plan. It's extraordinary. And to me, it's proof that really they were simply thinking that they could bully Jeremy into resigning, that they would create an atmosphere a bit like in a workplace where nobody's supporting him. He's in what we call sent to Coventry, kind of isolated. And in the end, he buckles under pressure. But he didn't, because he's surrounded by people who got a much wider mandate amongst the party membership and who give him support. So he feels he's got a mandate that he must stand up, he must champion. He can't give in, because it's not about him. He keeps saying this. It's not about me. It's about the movement that's grown up. So I think that's one factor, that we've got an establishment now biting back, but not very effectively. I mean, I don't want to be over-optimistic, because I now think there are big challenges facing Corbyn, but I think that the establishment have not got many capacities. I mean, I think in Spain it's a different situation, but there the political establishment began to recoup a bit against Podemos. I mean, I think that was more probably mistakes on Podemos's part. Their electoral rise hasn't been as strong.
This is Bill Resnick for The Old Mole talking to Hillary Wainwright. We're discussing the current state of politics, particularly in Britain, where in England, where she lives and reports on, has been working for many years. But they all apply to the United States. Our establishment is as blind and deaf and encased in there. They all have high priests, the establishments, who tell them everything they're doing is right and it will work out and the world's never been in better shape and the Chinese masses are all having better lives and Africa is really growing and in the United States we're just having growing pains, or in England, and these movements that you see cropping up here and there, they're told that these are just the dead enders who just want to retain their privilege. They've got a whole discourse and understandings, that is, even the ones who are interested in intellectual life and in understanding the world. So I don't think we can expect much from them, but their system is failing and creating more inequality and also environmental threats. It won't come from the top. It's going to have to come from what happens on the ground as people are trying to save themselves and then coming to affiliate, right, with either a right wing who is out prospecting for votes and especially support, and they're doing quite well, although the United States, Trump is an absurdity and might still win the election. But it seems to me it's the what's happening below, even if it's really embryonic now, that's what's sort of important.
I agree with you in the sense that I think that the key question, once we've understood these movements, these political movements that we've just been discussing, I think the next step in the discussion is kind of what next, and there I think you're hinting at the issue, which is really who's got solutions to the systemic global problems that we face. And I think this then points to a different kind of movement from the movements we've had in the traditional labor movements, which have tended to be defensive. I mean, they've had to defend themselves against a lot, you know, against a sort of rampant capitalism, but they've not tended to be about alternative forms of production, alternative forms of energy, alternative environmental solutions. Whereas I think now we're seeing a slightly different kind of movement developing, which, well, to me has got some similarities to the women's movement in the sense that it's prefiguring in the present, in the solutions it finds now, it's prefiguring alternatives. So it's not happy with just protesting, just making demands on government. It's actually creating productive alternatives. So in the whole classic areas, the whole area of energy, where people are not just campaigning for renewables, they're actually creating renewables. They're organizing the installation of solar panels. They're organizing energy cooperatives to produce energy in a sustainable way. They're looking at how to convert engineering industry from weapons production to the production of wind power facilities. You know, there's a kind of creativity that I think it's really important that the new political movements find ways of supporting. I think that generally is a new kind of politics, because the model of politics on the left has tended to be, we need progressive, enlightened experts who will plan and who will provide solutions of an enlightened kind that we'll all benefit from. And I think the new generations, which, I mean, I think this goes back actually to 68, where we really had the first break from that sort of reliance on professional expertise, and instead an assertion of a kind of practical tacit knowledge that was not expressed through individual entrepreneurs, but through collaborative movements. So the women's movement, for me, was the most formative, where we found solutions to childcare, to violence against women, to housework, by collaborating, you know, by sort of collective cooperative childcare, new kinds of housing, centres for women who'd been victims of violence or victims of rape. And then we did demand public resources to facilitate those initiatives. But the creativity was in the movements. And I think that's the pattern now, but we haven't yet got a kind of that combination of creativity from below with a facilitating kind of leadership from above. And that's what I hope will develop in the next phase of Jeremy Corbyn's leadership.
Hillary Rainer, that was a wonderful place to conclude the interview. There really is great hope. There's also, though, real grim possibilities. And it's in that combination of creativity below and organization below and self-help below and respect and building communities of respect for all and care for all. And some of that is developing, it seems to me. Hillary Wainwright, thanks so much for talking to us, and keep up the good work. And
well, thanks, Bill. I'm happy to talk again. I've enjoyed it.
Right. And people should look up Red Pepper. Go on the web or all these other ways of finding your way to very interesting things. And consider Red Pepper. In fact, Hillary, you have a new offer, a sort of a Marxist marketing campaign from each according to their capacities, to each according to their needs. People choose.
Pay as you feel.
People can choose, not quite that, but you can subscribe it basically at lower rates if you think you need the service but don't have enough money and nobody checks on you. It's an honor system. People should look at Red Pepper. Thanks a lot for talking to us, Hillary.
Okay, thanks, Bill.